Blog Talk Radio.
Crazy, sleepy, milky, right beneath this netting of skin. I wake up, I am lying peacefully. I'm lying peaceful and my knees are open to the sun. I desire him. He is absolutely ready to seize me. In heart, I am Muslim. In heart, I am an American.
Another Friday night with nothing to lose. Here we go. Yeah, rock and roll nigger indeed. We got a great show here set for you tonight, this Friday night. And what month is it? May? Yeah, here we go. May, yeah. We have tonight we have Louis Rivas with us talking about his the debut of his new book, Random Acts of Terrorism, an 80-page perfect-bound book published by Citizens for Decent Literature. And we also will have Mr. William Seward Bonney talking about his new book, From Cleft Jaw. All right. But anyhow, I'm going to bring on my my co-host here, Mr. Michael D. Gosinski, and then we'll roll from there. Mr. Michael D. Gosinski, are you there?
Hola, Senor Fouge.
Hola, hola. Of course, Sarah.
I think I'm offended by your music choice to open the open the show.
What you find that? Why are you offended?
I mean, man, with dropping the N word, I think you alienated half the guests. Would Negro be more PC?
A little more PC. Well, you know, I mean. You're kind of you're living up there in Painted Post, right? So you're kind of a wigger. So anyhow,
we don't have those. It would require bathing.
Bathing, huh?
Yes, we just have the green teeth next.
All right, and of course, our other co-host, Michelle Quinn, is running late. I think, what do you think she's doing, slinging tacos? What do you think she does with those tacos?
Yeah, well, I know what she does with those tacos.
You and me both.
She's been practicing her yoga.
Taco yoga, huh?
Yeah.
That sounds kind of hot. anyhow, I'm sure she'll be back. She'll be on here real soon. And so anyhow, I guess, you know what? You need to remove your hat. I'm going to remove my hat. And anyone else out there, you know, you need to stand up, put your hand across your heart.
Here's for America.
Yeah, remove your rugs, remove your hats and everything, and stand up for the Pledge of Allegiance. Especially this Pledge of Allegiance I got here that we host on the show. It's Abraham Lincoln. It's an actual recording of Abraham Lincoln from Gettysburg, from 1863, November 1863. Here we go.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Ah, Jesus Christ, that moves me every fucking time. Moves me and my bowels. All right, so here we go. Wow, another Friday night. Well, you know, what's new there, Mr. Gacinski and Painted Post? Anything new going on there? Anything going on with you in the literary world? Or?
Well, I have that June 1st, Regardless of Authority goes live.
Regardless of Authority?
Yes. The project I'm doing with Alethea Dramer, it's going to be a new poetry, art, photography zine, regardlessofauthority.wordpress.com. So submit. That's some pretty good shit.
How's that going? I understand you're the poetry editor for that. Is that correct? How's that going for you so far, man?
It's going all right. I was having a bit of a problem where a lot of the submissions were winding up in my spam inbox. I'm not sure why.
Really? And why is that?
I have no fucking clue. I thought, shit, I'll be submitting to this goddamn thing. And then, you know, I don't know why I went to look at my spam box and I had like 10 submissions in my spam box. Oh, fuck, man.
Yeah, that's not a good sign.
No, that was kind of...
Is that
kind
any indication... Well, let me ask you this, Mr. Gacinski. Is that any indication of the type of submissions you're getting, the reason they're landing in your spam?
You know, actually, the best ones were in the damn spam box. Seriously, well, you know, I got one submission and it didn't wind up in the spam box, but that was in all Spanish. Everything. All Spanish.
Really?
Yeah, everything. It was the craziest shit. Because there's nothing to indicate that we habla español on the damn fucking site, but it's all Spanish. So,
that's great.
So
wow.
I may to send the rejection because no habla. I may have to use
right. Is that how you responded?
Later.
Is that what you said? Like no habla español.
Well, I haven't responded yet because I think I want to go through and use like a translator or something so I can type them a message and translate it into Spanish.
That's beautiful. Wow. That's great.
But.
Oh, man. All right. Well, so June 1st, right? June 1st? Is that
when
it's going to debut?
Live, yes.
That's beautiful. Are you guys going to have a release party or something fancy for that?
Oh, jeez. Any excuse to party.
I always look for an excuse to party. I'm partying right now.
A party consists of a bonfire, people burning their trash out here, so I don't know.
Burning trash? Well, you know, you could have a party where people burn chapbooks. So anyhow, yeah, so tonight, oh, wait, I think, wait a second here. Oh, my gosh. I think our other co-host might be here. Dr. Quinn. Dr. Quinn, are you there? Dr. Quinn.
I'm here. Are you ladies done exchanging recipes and stuff? Or?
Recipes? Oh, a recipe for disaster.
We haven't started the recipes.
Huh?
We haven't even started the recipes yet. We were waiting for you.
Oh, fantastic.
We wanted to know about these magical tacos you always tell us about.
Yeah, what do you do with these tacos, Dr. Quinn? What do we hear about you slinging tacos?
I told you that is a top secret. That's top secret business there.
Top secret.
No, you know that. I work at a restaurant. What?
No. I had no idea it had anything to do with the restaurant.
You didn't?
No, I thought I thought the opposite.
Oh my God! I told you. Yeah, I.
No,
worked,
when I think tacos, I think
I know what you think. Yes, I know. But no, it's not that kind of tacos.
That's disappointing. All right.
I see,
are we done?
Do
I need to continue here, huh?
You're not coughing up a lung, Quinn. Let's see. You're back.
Not for now. It'll pop up in a little bit. I'm not completely done, but I'm much better. Yes.
Well, that's good.
But anyway,
to hear.
Do we need to continue with the taco discussion or?
No, we understand how you. Yeah, we understand what you do with tacos at this point.
Okay.
But yeah, I'm glad to hear that the antibiotics have kicked in and you are no longer coughing up the lung or anything. Any other.
No more staphylococcus.
There she goes.
Yeah. See now we started. We talked about it, and now it's back.
You know, so.
All right.
Well, you know, I'm really excited about our first guest coming up here in just a minute, Louis Rivas and his new book, Random Acts of Terrorism. But I'm also really excited about a lot of the upcoming shows we have coming up, too, with Judy Chang.
Yes.
And also, please let us know who's going to be on June 7th. What? Who is it?
Sorry.
What the hell was that?
Yeah, what the hell
was
that?
A squeal of delight, gentlemen.
Okay.
Because I can't contain my excitement here.
All right.
Samantha Irby, the author of Meaty and the author of the blog Bitches Gotta Eat.
Bitches Gotta Eat. Yeah, Bitches Gotta Eat.
Bitches Gotta Eat.
So do some guys,
so.
Like me. But I barely eat. But yeah, I'm really excited about that too. She, her blog... just put out there her blog again. What's the connection
to
it?
The address is bitchesgottaeat.blogspot.com.
Mm-hmm.
And what else do you want to know? Aside from it's amazing and you'll pee yourself.
She is one of the funniest fucking bloggers I have ever read.
Yes. She
for
is.
Real. For
really
real.
Instant fan. As soon as you introduced her, you know, her writing and her blog to me, I was a fan, like, instantly. It's like, holy shit, this woman is phenomenal. So that will be a fun show on June 7th. But for now, yeah, tonight, as I said, we are focusing on Random Acts of Terrorism. Yeah, and none of that coughing shit. Random Acts of Terrorism by Mr. Louis Rivas.
And like a penicillin shot or something?
It's, as far as I know, it's now probably more allergy than anything, so I'm taking Zyrtec and waiting for it to dry up.
Maybe it's that damn gluten. You never know.
Yeah.
Could be gluten.
you're the gluten one.
All right. So, you know what?
All right.
I'm going to bring on Mr. Louis Rivas and let him talk about Random Acts of Terror and everything else he has going on here. This should be pretty interesting. Alrighty. So, here we go. Mr. Louis Rivas, are you there, buddy?
Yes, sir. How's everybody doing?
Good.
Hey,
thank
how's
you.
It going, man?
What's up, Louis? Hola.
Hola.
Am I butchering your name, Louis Rivas? Is that correct? Is that how you pronounce it?
Well, the first name is Luis. Louis is also the same thing, yeah. But Luis and Louis is fine.
All right. I'm terrible with names. I apologize.
It's all good.
All right. Yeah. So your poetry collection, Random Acts of Terror, is coming up here. 80-page perfect bound from Citizens for Decent Literature coming up.
Woo!
Woo! Yeah. June 23rd. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's the release date, June 23rd.
Yeah. Well, you know what? I got a little bomb. here that, you know, speaking of terror and terrorism, I've got a little bomb here to release. On June 22nd, there's going to be a reading in Jacksonville, Illinois, and I think your book's going to be there live at this reading, and there's going to be like two or three bands, a stand-up comedian, and a bunch of poets and all that, and your book's going to be pimped out, and, you know, I might read some stuff from the book myself. Well, like rolling in a... Like
don't
a,
let him do it, Luis. Well, let him not do it.
I'm sure
I'm
he'll
do it by
justice.
Rolling
you,
in a
you,
vat
you,
of butter.
Luis, you know what now?
But anyhow...
Wait, did someone say fuck a bag of butter?
Yes.
Did I just hear that? Because I will love you forever if I heard you say that.
Yeah, there will be a kiddie pool, there will be butter, and I will be rolling and dancing in it. But anyhow, so, Luis, Mr.
Yes.
Rivas, I'm just going to call you Mr. Rivas because I can't say, I always want to call you Luis. I'm terrible with names, like I said.
You can just call me Luis if it's easier.
If it suits you fine, that works for me too. So anyhow, thanks for coming on, man. And, you know, I have read through the manuscript for Random Acts of Terror. And, it's pretty impressive. What inspired this book? I mean, how did this come about for you? What's the process like writing
well,
a,
I guess,
a collection?
It kind of came through, like, the desperation of just trying to put something together that kind of shared a common theme. But
mm-hmm.
I've always written poems, you know, very political, but also just quite random and even not so political. And all of them had this, like, this undertone of violence. So I thought, all right, if I were to put something together, that would be the thing that would link them together. And then a few years ago, I just started, just half-assedly just sending it out and seeing if any publishers wanted it. And,
mm-hmm.
of course, no one did. I sent it to a few people, and they were just straight out like, we're going to pass on this. This is borderline crazy shit right here. So I felt like they were, you know, like it was good. It's not like they were bad. It was just like it needed the right publisher, the one
mm-hmm.
with enough guts to do it. Basically poems came from kind of a critique of living here in the States, and also like I did a little bit of traveling, so I went to Central America and El Salvador, and kind of had the privilege to talk to a lot of like former guerrilleros, former like guerrilla insurgents, and they spoke of their experience, and it was like some amazing stuff. And from that point on, I thought like it'd be really cool if I can like poetically try to capture all the stuff that it was told to me and that I see here in the States as well, and kind of create like this call to really wake people up to harness that anger that I think a lot of people feel, and
mm-hmm.
I don't know what to do with it, but I just want to see if I can do it.
Well, yeah, poetry is always a good medium and venue to harness and release that frustration and, you know, set it free. I'm, you know, from what I've read of Random Acts of Terror, I'm really impressed. Wow, you know, so you've been to Central America and other places? Wow, what was that like? How much of an influence did that have on this collection of work?
Well, let's see. Before going to El Salvador, poetry was just like this very like literary, Bukowski-esque, very self-congratulatory, masturbatory sort of thing, right? Like, I didn't really think of it as anything worthy of anything. It was just like, you know, it's just like writing for the sake of writing, which is bullshit. And
uh-huh.
then when I came back, I felt like very like radicalized, like I should probably do something. I consider myself someone that has somewhat of talent when it comes to writing. So if I can use that to kind of, you know, further something good that's outside of myself, that's bigger than myself, then I'd be okay. Then I would sleep okay at night. So that's where
okay.
it came from. And so after El Salvador, like, yeah, like a lot of my approaches were very radicalized. I felt like if I had the luxury to sit down and write something, put pen to paper, sure as fuck it's not going to be about me hitting on women at a bar anymore, you know? It's going to be something that really speaks to people that matters. And although that obviously could matter to people, it doesn't matter to me. And I don't think it resonates with a lot of people. So that basically did it when I came back. I wanted to share my experience, what I see, and also other people's experiences and the oppression the discrimination and the stuff that a lot of people go through. But it's not like a political manifesto. It's not it's not something you're gonna pick up and be like, oh, okay, this is his politics. This is some boring one-dimensional shit. Like, it's very personal. Like, I talk about like what people do, the gross things that people have to do, the desperate things that people have to do when, you know, jobs are scarce, money is scarce. You know, I can go on and on, but basically my trips really like changed my approach and my angle to poetry. And one person that came from this that I didn't know about up until going to El Salvador was this dude named Roque Dalton, who was like this amazing, amazing poet, like hands down my favorite poet, a Salvadoran poet, who was like a guerrilla himself. He fought he was part of like this guerrilla group in El Salvador, and he got killed, but he produced like some amazing works of poetry. And so when that name, because a lot of stuff in El Salvador is named after him, he's a celebrated like a revolutionary, even literary hero that a lot of people in the U.S. don't know of. But I highly recommend that if anyone's into like just poetry, it doesn't even have to be political, if anyone's into good poetry, to pick up this dude named Roque Dalton. And reading him like really, really also like changed my approach to poetry.
Wow. Okay. I'm not familiar with this guy. What's his name again? One more time. Like, is there like a link or any place we could, you know, people.
You could just Google it.
Yeah.
His first name is a weird spelling. It's Roque. Roque.
Okay.
Roque.
Roque.
Roque. And his last name is Dalton, like the Dalton brothers.
Uh-huh.
Funny story. His dad was American, like, you know, Caucasian. He was part of this Dalton, like, you know, like Western gun-toting, bank-robbing gang, you know, the Dalton brothers, the Dalton gang, I think they were called. And he just traveled or I guess fled or whatever, but he eventually ended up in El Salvador and had a kid, and his kid ended up being this crazy-ass revolutionary poet.
Wow.
Dalton. Yeah.
Amazing. All right. Wow. Very fascinating. Man. Okay.
And there's your history lesson.
yeah, history. Yeah, I'm a big history buff. So you know, anything you can divulge as far as history or whatever, you know, I'm all about that. So I'm curious, how has your like your school studies, you know, had an effect on you? You've talked about your travels, but how has school and studying, had an effect on your writing as a poet or And you're more than a poet, right? You write prose too. I mean, what?
Yeah, I'm all over the place.
Yeah.
Let's see. Okay, so technically, I guess I'm a student journalist.
Uh-huh.
I'm going to school to get my BA in journalism, and I'm also with an emphasis in. Why? Okay, they're laughing at me.
Sorry, I'm a reporter.
I
am.
Well,
so
this is going to be interesting.
We'll talk.
Okay.
Go ahead.
Yeah. So. So my studies, like, basically I chose journalism because English was too boring. I was, like, an English major for, like, one semester,
right.
And that shit was just dull. Like, I don't want to write, like, academic, scholarly, highbrow shit. I want to write about, like, stuff that normal people want to read. And that's what journalism should be, anyway.
Right.
So I got into it for selfish reasons of just to, like, better my writing. And so I took all my journalism classes, you know, and it did really help out a lot when it comes to not even prose, but poetry, anything to do with writing and communicating the shit that's going on in your brain through your paper. The journalism classes are really good at helping you make that a more like cogent process. So journalism is interesting because we are hammered, we are taught, we are spoon fed this idea of objectivity, of neutrality. You got to get both sides of an issue. You got to get three sides of an issue. You got to get, you know, equal amount of space for the other person to talk about why they're doing whatever they're doing. And I understand that, of course. I mean, that makes something critical and comprehensive.
Mm-hmm.
But I think the negative consequences to reporters, to journalists in this, is that that process, that indoctrination, is of, like, people thinking that, like, it's not good to be active, to be an activist, to have passionate feelings on subjects. You're supposed to be this fair and balanced, if I can borrow the words of the fascist Fox News, a fair and balanced reporter, a fair and balanced writer. And there's situations that require you not to be fair and balanced require you not to be neutral. You can't be neutral. Howard Zinn said it, right? You can't be neutral in moving trains. Like, shit is happening all around you. What are you going to do? You're going to document it? Like, no, you have an obligation to your humanity, to your whatever wakes you up in the morning, to do something. And often is the case that a lot of people, especially journalists, don't do shit. They just write it, and then that's it. So it's very interesting because, as you can see in my poetry and a lot of my writing, it's like, I'm not only a writer, I'm not only a poet, like, I'm an activist, you know? Like, I'm out there trying to create some sort of difference, trying to create this culture of anti-capitalism, of resistance, and trying to do some other stuff if anyone wants to sit down and talk. But, you know, it's an interesting thing because I'm supposed to be this professional thing.
Well, yeah, that I find that very fascinating, the fact that you're working on being a journalist. Is that correct?
I mean, yeah.
And yet you find yourself being an activist and all that, and you find yourself sort of anti-capitalism. I mean, that's sort of a unique combination there. I mean, you have to be objective and neutral if you're going to be a journalist, or, you know, a conventional journalist. What do you foresee yourself being, like, as far as journalism goes and all that? I mean, that all kind of contradicts. I mean, there's like a big storm there of, like, contradictory, you know, being a journalist
and
being an activist. I mean, how do you, like, harness and control all those different feelings and emotions or whatnot? And
I harness and control them very well. And I also reconcile these supposed contradictions by a couple what I consider to be universal truths.
The first is this
famous late Chicano journalist and activist by the name of Ruben Salazar, who was killed by the sheriff's department here in Los Angeles in East LA. And before he died, he was on a TV show, and a reporter, a fellow colleague, asked him, you know, how can you be objective, or how can you do the things that you're doing, be part of the community and write about them objectively? And Ruben eloquently said, and it's something that is always going to stick with me, said, objectivity is impossible. The way that we know it is you can't be objective. There's no
right.
such thing as objectivity. And I think the other universal truth is, if someone knows how to write, then they just know how to write. They're going to market themselves, they're going to be hired. If you have a talent, then be good at that talent. So I consider myself, like, a pretty decent writer, very passionate about certain issues. I can write about these issues better than other people that don't know these issues. So it's that lack of objectivity, what I call experience, that I have that perhaps other people don't have, that enables me to be a better reporter and writer on certain issues. Like I said, I know the formula of writing a story. I mean, anyone can really do it if you just take, like, a year of journalism school, so it's no big deal. But that's just boring. I think where I want to see myself is, like, doing feature stuff, like really magazine-based or online-based documentarian stuff, you know.
Okay, yeah.
I like arts and entertainment and stuff like that, too. But I think, like, the underbelly of issues, urban issues, international issues, I can very much be interested in write about stuff like that. And there's no contradiction there, I don't think.
No, and I love that, appreciate the passion. Have you tried finding a job yet?
Well, I do work a couple of jobs here and there. I do work for my school. Yeah.
Well, wait, how I probably should ask, how young are you?
Not that young. I'm 30.
Okay.
Oh,
okay.
That's young. That's really young. I'm like 82.
You look pretty good for your age.
Thank you very much. No, seriously, go ahead.
Okay, so you work for the school, and have you – the only reason I say that, and I am certainly – you know, I like I said, I love the passion, and I hope that as journalism decides what it wants to be when it grows up, that there is a place for you to do what you're doing. That's all
I
was just trying to say.
If there isn't a place for me, then – maybe journalism isn't for me. Like I said, I first went into it just to be a better writer. I became a better writer through it, so I'm indebted to it. But if I can't get hired in the field of journalism, there's other areas, you know. At the end of the day, I consider myself like a a social justice activist human being. That's my hierarchy of description. Like, that's where I am.
Everything
else is secondary.
Freelance. Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
just freelance your shit.
Sure.
You will be better off. Anyway.
Although,
one of my dream internships is
Vice, though. Like, I want to work for Vice. They're crazy.
I have to agree with Michelle on that. I've known a couple people who were staff writers for newspapers, and it's ultimately, like you said, there's no objectivity. They have to write to keep their job what the paper, the market, the paper's trying to sell to.
Yeah.
Sort of. Now, your friend's experience was where? You had one at the L.A. Times, right, Zinsk?
Yeah, I know someone at the L.A. Times, and actually he had to follow around Paul Ryan and Mitt Romney for the whole presidential campaign. He's a senior staff writer. And he told me straight up, he said, I can't say anything good about him. If there is anything good about him, the paper won't allow it. Because the market that they're going to is a very, very left-leaning market. And they have to keep that in mind, you know, who their audience is. And anybody who works for Ukiah News.
See, that makes me sad.
I had a buddy who worked for a Ukiah newspaper, and his chief editor was fighting with some local politician, so my buddy wrote a series of pieces slamming the guy, comparing him to Jim Jones from the People's Temple. I have copies of it. If I can find them, I'll scan them, and I'll send them to you at the show. You wouldn't believe it. It's horrible. You laugh so hard. I mean, it is so sick, so insidious.
I guess that's a hell of a comparison if the guy, but whoa, bring out Jim Jones like that.
But
anyway, we digress.
I agree, freelance.
All right, so.
Yeah.
So.
Go ahead.
So, Mr. Rivas.
Yes, sir.
Luis? What do you think it means to be a revolutionary? I mean, in this day and age, what does it mean? I mean, you know, does it mean going around, walking around the mall wearing a Che Guevara shirt, T-shirt? Or, I mean, what today, you know, especially here in America, what's it mean to be revolutionary? I mean, in your opinion.
Yeah, the first thing is, I think that word has been very bastardized, and
absolutely
appropriated and watered down to mean something that it doesn't mean anymore. People just throw that word around like it's like a synonym for being a badass, or a synonym for something that's extreme. I don't know about hipster, but
yes,
okay, but yeah. So I guess the first thing is, like, to really understand what that word means. It's one of the most important words, I would say, in the English language, and it's a complete restructuring of the way things are, right? So, like, if you call yourself one, if you call yourself a revolutionary, you have to understand, like, what does that mean, and what do you want it to mean? What's the implication in that? And so, you know, I don't call myself a revolutionary because I want to, like, elect a certain person to office, or I want to pass, like, a dope reformist bill or policy. Like, I really want to alter things completely, fundamentally. I want to destroy current, you know, social structures, like, completely, and there needs to be, like, a complete restructuring of who's on top in society and who's at the bottom. And so what it means today to be, or to call yourself, a revolutionary is understanding that. And, like, the first question anyone should ask themselves, even if they're not political, whatever, is, like, are they happy? If they're happy, then whatever. They don't have to listen to me. They don't have to read anything. They can do whatever they're doing. But if the answer to that question is that they ask themselves is that they're not happy, then they have to think about why. And if the ultimate response or the analysis is that, you know, shit is fucked up, that things have to change, then that's when you start looking into different, you know, ideologies. You start talking about two people. You start searching out like different alternatives, the way of thinking and the way of being and living. And so revolutionary means putting those ideas into some tangible practice and trying to carry them out, like, you know, trying to manifest these things. That's a broad definition, but that's basically what it means.
All right. So, So, Mr. Rivas, Would you mind reading what poem from your manuscript, Random Acts of Terror? Is there a particular poem or piece that you that's really close and personal to you that you would like to share with us? I mean, it would be nice to hear you actually read a piece from this manuscript here. Is there one you would like to read or share with us?
The thing is, I'm actually I don't have any poems in front of me. I'm on my phone and I'm with my family, so I don't.
You're with your family and on this show? Wow, you should never ever
read poems. My brother right here. We just have to rest.
You should never ever call into this show with your family around. Not a good thing.
They're cool. They're all all right. But so as far as poems go, I don't have anything. I can look on my phone here.
Well, that's okay. What if I just read one of your poems?
I'm sure I'll do it for you.
Yeah, I'll do
That'd
it.
That'd be great. I'd be honored if someone wants to read one of the poems for sure. I don't know if you have the love poem for Ulrika Meinhof. That's one that I wrote not too long ago,
mm-hmm.
and that's one that I'm super proud of. It took me many months to write. This is kind of like a love poem, like I said, and I don't really write love poems because they're embarrassing and oftentimes corny.
Right. Yes, they are.
Ulrika Meinhof, a quick little history lesson, is a huge inspiration, a hero to me. She was this journalist.
Uh-huh.
She was a mother. She was an urban gorilla, an activist, to say the least. But anyway, she was this well-rounded person that kind of embodies what I want to be. You know, she put into practice what bothered her in life. She asked herself that question. Is she correct? And her ultimate decision or answer was no. And she acted on that. And she was part of this group called the Red Army Faction. And that's a huge influence on that book. The whole title of it, Random Acts of Terror, the whole the star on the cover with the gun over it and the RET, that's all an homage to the RAF, the Red Army Faction from West Germany. So
wow.
I would say that one is one of my more personal poems, I guess.
Really? So that poem, the title of that poem is what? Poetry is
bourgeois.
Bourgeois, right? Yeah, I have it right here. Yeah, no. If you don't have it in front of you, I could read it for you. I have a terrible voice. I could read it like Mickey Mouse, like a communist Mickey Mouse.
Mickey Mouse isn't a communist, he's a fascist.
That's fascist. I could read it like a fascist Mickey Mouse.
Amen, brother.
Yes.
No, but seriously, poetry is bourgeois. Yeah, love poem for Ulrika. How do you pronounce her name again?
Ulrika Meinhof.
Ulrika Meinhof. Okay, I'm
Ulrika Meinhof.
Ulrika Meinhof. You know what? I'm going to go ahead and read it for you, man. Okay? If you don't have it available, I'll just read it. I have it right here. I'll read it for you, okay? Is that cool with you?
Absolutely.
All right. Poetry is bourgeois. Love poem for Ulrika Meinhof. First, I would just like to apologize for writing a love poem. You know, I don't normally do this. Write love poems, let alone to dead German women. But there has not been sufficient amount of work written in your tribute, in your honor, an affected, tormented creator of rebellion. Literary in actuality, Ulrika Meinhof, with dark, hurt, mothering eyes. She who embraced the clandestine, a mother, a journalist, a fighter, a revolutionary that transcended her mortality, as we all must, in the righteous cause against capitalism and imperialism. She who denounced the myth of objectivity that pollutes the world of journalism, neutrality, which is fetishized into grandeur, that perpetuates inaction, callousness, well-measured treachery, criminality of apathy. She who stopped writing in the professional sense, understanding the violence of textual silence, and rose up with Red Army Faction comrades who acted not from choice but of historical obligation, as we all must. She who understood that destruction begets destruction, but violence begets resistance, and for her I would abandon my stance against monogamy, and for her I would rethink my stance on romantic relationships, and for her I would loosen my dogma on the idea of marriage. Hysterically, I mean, historically, a method of subjugation of women, a perpetuating mechanism of capitalism, and for her, I would fall with wide open arms into ideological abandon, suspending my radical politics on marriage, relationships, and worship her with my unequal, flawed, incomplete, infantile revisionist love, and get on one knee, confess to her my bourgeois affection, but she would demand that I get up, look her straight in the eye, as equals, all convenience and mannerisms aside, and she would say to me, comrade, to hell with that. You are my equal. Do not attempt to control yourself as a way to pay homage to me. Nothing is sacred. You struggle alongside me. That's all. Everything else is subjugated naturally. She would turn down my reactionary offer and say, I have one thing to ask. Stop writing. Start acting. Poetry is bourgeois. And I would take out my rejection on all future partners, incomparably measure them to lick, a rejection that I would never recover from a German woman, now 37 years dead, with cold, unfeeling doctors, slicing up her brain, still trying to figure out her revolutionary commitment, what they mistakenly term as madness, sickness, which we call adequate repulsion for the world, appropriately measured reaction to it, proportional anger, indignation, but above all things only, love. Love. All things love. End poem. And I apologize for screwing up the name. Like I said, I'm terrible with names, but...
No, that's good. I like that you said hysterical instead of historical.
I did. That was like a Freudian slip. Hysterical.
Maybe you can take some journalism classes yourself, Brian.
Yeah, I done got my degree in that shit. But anyhow, seriously, yeah, I like that poem, and this whole collection is it's really good, man, and I'm excited about it, and I'm excited about, you know, the debut coming up here in June 23rd. Man, is there anything else, Luis, that you would – or Luis.
Hey, you got it.
Anything you would else, you know, anything else you would like to add, I mean, or talk about as far as this –
Yeah, I mean, we're gonna be recording, or we are recording, and we're producing this little short video of that poem. So,
really,
everybody on Facebook and Twitter and stuff like that, look out for that.
Uh-huh.
I'll post it on my blog, which is super super outdated and needs to be updated at piecesillegal.com. But I'm sure that I'm gonna be posting it there. And YouTube and stuff like that. So anyway, I'll coordinate everything with Michelle and with everybody else. So yeah, just keep an eye out for this book. Keep an eye out for readings. If anyone's in Los Angeles or in Southern California, I plan to be doing a lot of readings from this book. And I think I don't have the exact URL with me, but you can pre-order the book, I believe, if you go to some website somewhere online, and I'm sure you can find that book and order it and donate heavily to Michelle and Citizens for Decent Literature. The real writing and the real poetry is where the underground is, and everything outside of that is not good poetry. So you should support your local indie press and definitely support the underground poetry scene that's going on.
So Mr. Rivas, are there any poetry readings you plan on going to anytime soon, or I mean, what's the scene like there? I'm just curious. What's the poetry scene like there in Los Angeles? You live in Los Angeles, right? I mean, you're in that area or close?
No, I live in downtown in the heart of Skid Row.
Yeah,
I'm not really part of the poetry scene, but I know that it exists. And there's many places in downtown and in the greater Los Angeles area that have open mics on a regular basis. There's one right here at the Last Bookstore. I think it's off of Spring and Fourth. Anyway, somewhere in downtown. And they have weekly Monday night open mics. I'm going to be going to that this coming Monday. There's this other dope place in Boyle Heights called Corazón del Pueblo, which means the heart of the people. and they have their open mics, I think, twice a month on Wednesdays. So I missed the last one. I promised someone I was going to recite a cat poem, but some shit happened and I couldn't make it. But anyway, so yeah, there's a bunch of other places. There's definitely a spot where, you know, if you're a poet and you're good, LA is a pretty okay place to be. There's always stuff going on. So anyway, I'm planning to make my rounds.
Well, that's good to hear. Well, hey, man, we've got some other callers here. I'm going to take a caller, and are you up for answering anybody's questions, if they have any questions for you?
Yeah, I'm free. I'm
you should, yeah, all right, good. I'm glad you're here. Stay on for the entire show. We have all kinds of fun stuff planned still. We're still, you know, really early on here, and really enjoyed what you've had to say and everything you've had to share, and I've learned some stuff, definitely, for sure. We're going to bring on a caller. Caller, we have a caller coming on here right now.
Unmuted.
Hello, caller. You're on. You're on the Nothing to Lose show.
I don't feel comfortable even calling into this damn thing. The fact is that I'm probably on some kind of damn no-fly list now for calling into this damn thing. Now, here's... What's the snickering about in the background?
Nothing. I'm just happy to hear from you, Ed.
Thanks, Michelle. And the thing is... Ed Standish? Who's that?
It's Ed Standish.
Ed Standish, this is Luis. I love your Facebook, man. You speak a lot of true Americanisms. I love following you on Facebook.
You kiss my ass, Luis Rivas. The thing I got to talk to you about. I'm on a no-fly list now for just calling in here, Luis Rivas. And I'm going to tell you something right now. I'm looking at this damn cover on this damn thing, and I see a machine gun and a red star. And I agree with your acronym, RAC, because that's the perfect damn name for your book. Hot ass. Now, the question I have for you is this, Luis Rivas.
Yes,
you're going to delete me off of Facebook, aren't you?
No, why would I do that?
Well, here's the thing, mister. Are you now, have you ever been a member of the Communist Party?
Yes, I'm currently a member.
You've got to be kidding me.
No. I'm a card
carrying
member.
Are you off of your rocker, sir?
No, I'm quite firmly placed on my rocker.
Now, what on earth do you mean you're currently a member of that? That was a joke question, son.
the Communist Party of the USA is still around, has been around since 1919. It's about to be 100 years old, but I'm a member, and thousands of people are members. If anyone's interested in joining, just Google them, cpusa.org.
You have got – I want to know something right now. The thing is, what the hell is your book about? What's RAP stand for, Random Acts of Terror? Do you realize the kind of language you're throwing around out there in a post-9/11 United States of America?
I do.
Do you realize the ramifications of such language with guns and revolution and terror in the title?
Yes. I welcome it. I do feel bad for the publishers and everyone associated with printing this book. Hopefully not too much harm will come to them or their reputation.
Now, what do you mean you feel bad? Are you stand for revolution and terror and armed resistance to the United States government?
Yeah, all those things, yeah.
You got to be kidding me.
No, I'm not. Ed, I think we share a lot of things in common, you know?
You tell me what I share in common with you.
We both like our weapons, don't we?
You better damn well believe it. Now, have you ever even fired a gun?
Yes. I go to the gun range quite regularly.
What are you packing?
I do not own any weapons. If that was
a damn
weapon,
you're calling for revolution? I'm going to tell you something right now.
Guns are expensive.
Guns are expensive? You have got to be kidding me. The thing is, you're calling for armed revolution in the United States and you don't have a weapon? you have got.
I got my poetry. That's kind of a weapon.
Now, that's a weapon to clear out a room, that's for sure. I'll tell you that right now. Rivas, I don't know what the hell else I got in common with you. I know I've been around guns my whole damn life.
We're both anti-government.
I'll tell you
are
something
you?
Right now. I'm anti that son of a bitch
supporter?
In office right now. I'm anti against that son of a bitch in the office right now. But I'll tell you this right now. If some kind of communist revolution was to happen in this United States of America, I would stand next to the flag of this country. I'd stand next to the bald eagle, and I'd stand up to protect this country. We got our damn problems, but we sure as hell don't need no Marxists taking anything over.
I hate to break it to you, Ed, but a lot of good things that we currently enjoy, like Social Security, unemployment, a lot of these benefits were brought to you by communists, anarchists, and other radicals. They're not going away. There might not be a communist revolution, but there's definitely going to be heavily influenced people in office that are influenced by communists. That isn't going to go away anytime soon.
Who in office is influenced by communism? I would need their name right now.
Yeah, I don't have that list handy, but, you know.
They're members of your communist party?
No, unfortunately, none of us are in power.
And that's going to stay that way, too, sir, because I'm going to work
probably
day and night. Day and night. I may
probably
even skip a few lawn mowings here and there just to make sure that communism doesn't take over.
That's commitment.
Right.
That's commitment.
This has been very, very informative.
Off now, you cod ass.
I'm going to interject here because we have another guest coming up here in a few minutes, and I want to give Mr. Luis Rivas the typical interview questions here that we normally give everyone that we have on. These are very important questions, very relevant to today's society and all that. These are just simple, fun, basic questions, Mr. Rivas, that we ask of every guest we have on the show. So are you ready for like a little quickie mini interview here, Mr. Rivas?
He probably doesn't even own a weed whacker.
I own a weed whacker.
I don't have a lot of
damn
weed whacker
grass out there, especially the kind you cut in Los Angeles. I can tell you that right now.
I have a garden.
You have marijuana probably everywhere.
No marijuana. Just broccoli.
All right. So anyhow, here is the interview questions we have that we give to every guest we have on the show. Mr. Rivas, are you ready for this? Mini interview. This is like a little mini interview within an interview. This is just a standard thing we do with every guest we have on the show. Are you ready?
Yes, I'm ready.
Okay, brace yourself. All right.
All right.
Question number one. Do you make eye contact when you make love?
I try to, yes.
You try to? Can you elaborate on that? I mean,
well, often is the case that a position that I highly enjoy, it makes it very difficult to look into a person's eyes.
Good answer. So you're talking doggy, maybe?
Yes. No. Well, doggy style. I think the operative word is style. Because if you leave out
doggy style.
Very,
oh, that is the operative word.
Okay.
Yeah.
Rear entry position. Let's be
clear
here.
Oh gosh. Quinn, you really rear? Okay. We know where Quinn likes it. The poop hole.
No,
so anyhow,
jackass.
So anyhow, question number two. Okay. This question. You know, this one really seems to ruffle some feathers. Many times. Do you think it's ethical to like, I mean, you know, push the little thumbs up thingy, you know, your own posts on Facebook? And do you do it? And if not, do you know someone who does do it?
All right. So, like, I don't do it. I know people, good friends of mine that do it. And here's the thing. The way it works for me is, first of all, it's not a big deal, right? But it is kind of annoying. I think the only way that you can really be allowed to do that is if the post that you're posting is so fucking amazing, so phenomenal, that you cannot control You can't hold back your likingness.
Oh, Jesus.
You have to like it immediately.
Like a picture of...
Post.
It'd be like a picture
like
of Karl Marx being butt-fucked by a Sasquatch. That's
that
what
sounds
I'm
awesome,
a damn thumbs up to. I'll tell you that. And I'll tell you this, Rivas. I hope they implement thumbs down because I'm going to thumb down every damn thing you put on Facebook from now on.
Okay, all right. Question number three, Mr. Rivas. Part of our usual typical little interview within the interview is, okay, and this is another very important thing because this is something I have taken on myself and all my co-hosts. We all have this middle initial thing here. So would you ever consider activating a middle initial to enhance your poetry or writing career?
I guess. I never really thought of it. I used to use it because I do have a middle name, a middle initial, and I used it a couple times just because I thought it looked cool. But it doesn't really matter. So I guess to the answer to that question, no, I don't see there being a real purpose.
No,
for me
no.
Anyway.
Okay, for you. No. Yeah, I found that many poets and writers seem to think that adding a middle initial, like a the middle initial with a dot, somehow makes them more important. But good answer, man. Glad to hear you're not buying into that that craze. So, and here is the final question. And this one, this is, yeah. You know, brace yourself for this one. But and it's something I've always felt and I've always thought hard about. But I think that threesomes reveal a lot of who we are. If you were ever involved in an actual threesome, you know, sexually, would you consider yourself to be the queen bee or a worker bee?
Wait, can you differentiate between a worker bee and a queen bee?
Well, yeah, I guess it depends on what
are
kind
you
of
the
threesome
giver
you're
or the
engaged
receiver?
In.
Well,
you know, the
I
queen
know.
Bee
I mean,
being,
could...
yeah.
That's a fancy way of saying Marxists don't have genitals.
No, seriously, I think threesomes really do reveal a lot of who we are. And if you were engaged in a threesome, would you consider yourself to be, you know, the center of attention, or would you be more of, you know, I guess that's my thing with, you know, queen bee or a worker bee? You know, I'm trying to use euphemisms here and trying to be polite.
I see. Sure. I'd like to say I am ambidextrous in that regard. I can be either or.
Uh-huh.
Both have their pros and cons.
Right.
Although the queen bee is kind of appealing, I got to admit.
Right, absolutely, yeah.
But it does depend on the makeup of this threesome.
Oh, absolutely, yes.
Right? So I don't want to be the queen bee if, you know, if my male worker bees are...
If the worker bee has a stinger.
Yeah, right. I don't want to be
stung. Yeah, good.
I thought that was a prerequisite for joining the Communist Party.
Ed, who hurt you? Why are you so angry at me?
I'll tell you this right now, Rivas. The thing is, I put Merle Haggard videos on Facebook and you never like them. So you can kiss my ass.
Fair enough.
You
however,
start liking my
however,
videos and I'll change my tune about you, friend.
You know what? I do like your bald eagle over the background of the American flag waving in the wind with some patriotic text superimposed on it. I like those all the time. My favorite of yours, actually, is when, I don't know if this is a self-portrait or not, but there's this hugely obese, proud white American in one of those little rascal cruising chair things.
Oh, that's my wife,
has a couple,
jackass.
No, okay, well, she looked awesome. With a couple of machine guns and I think a Slurpee, smoking a cigarette, I think, and like a flag or something like that. Like I like that one. I think that's very artistic.
Well, thanks. I think about this, though. You want to flush all that down the toilet with your little red revolution. Think of all the things you'll be missing.
You got a point there. I have to reevaluate my politics now.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
All right. So, guys, hey, yeah. So,
never mind.
Mr. Rivas and Ed Standish and everybody else, we're going to take a quick break here, and we're going to come back with and bring on our other guest for the night, Mr. William Seward Bonney, who's going to talk about his new book, Galaxy vs. Sabretooth, published by Clefjaw Press.
Hey, Brian.
Yes, sir.
Brian, I got to turn in for the night, and I can't stick. I'm going to listen on that one. I can't be on the phone. But the thing is, I'm going to buy that damn book out of Rivas when it comes out. And I'll go on some damn list somewhere on the FBI or something like that, and I'm suing Michelle McDaniel. You guys have a good night, and I'll talk to you later. And I'll see you on Facebook, Louis Rivas.
That might cut into your black velvet fun, Ed.
Kiss my ass, whoever you are.
Good night, Ed.
Good night, everybody.
Good night, Ed. Thanks for calling in, buddy. All right. Thank you very much. All right. We're going to take a quick break here. We're going to have a little bit of Puff the Magic Dragon, and we'll come right back with Mr. William Seward Bonney, and he'll talk about his new book, Galaxy vs. Sabretooth. All right.
Yeah. All right.
Puff the Magic Dragon lives by the sea, and frolicked in the autumn mist in a land called Hanalei. Little Jackie Paper loved that rascal Puff, and brought him strings and sealing wax and other fancy stuff. Oh, Puff the Magic Dragon by the sea, and frolic in the autumn mist in a land called Hanalei. Puff the Magic Dragon lived by the sea, and frolic in the autumn mist in a land called Hanalei. Together they would travel on a boat with billows sail. Jackie kept a lookout perched on Puff's gigantic tail. Noble kings and princes would bow whenever they came. Pirate ships would lower their flags when Puff roared out his name. Oh, Puff the Magic Dragon lived by the sea, and frolicked in the autumn mist in a land called Hanalei. Puff the Magic Dragon lived by the sea, and frolicked in the autumn mist in a land called Hanalei. A dragon lives forever, but not so little boys. Painted wings and giant's rings make way for other toys.
Puffy Magic Dragon and Dr. Quinn's god-awful fucking cough.
Consumption.
He's got the consumption. So, we're back here, and coming up, we have the one and only Mr. William Seward Bonney, and he's going to be talking about his new his new book, Galaxy vs. Sabretooth. And let's welcome Mr. William Seward Bonney here, and get him on here and let him tell us a little bit about his book and what else is going on there. And he Colorado, Mr. William Seward Bonney, Mr. Bonney.
WSB.
Yeah. WSB, are you there?
What's up?
Hey, man.
What's up, man?
Good to hear from you, man, and thanks for holding, and thanks for, thanks for waiting for us here.
That was crazy as fuck. What the hell? I don't know what I just called into. That was awesome.
Well, is Mr. Standish?
this is just brilliant, beautiful. I'm glad to be a part of this tonight. How are you guys?
We're great. Glad to have you on here, man. So, yeah, tell us about this Galaxy versus Sabretooth. How did that how did that all come about?
Tell me about the title.
Yeah, that's an amazing title.
The
and the cover
fucking
art.
Title, dude. Tell me about the title. It's fucking crazy.
It is.
Well, a couple of years ago, I ate a lot of acid, and if you've ever seen Power Rangers, I used to like to eat acid and watch old 90s cartoons and, like, 90s kid shows.
Okay.
And, Power Rangers Trini, she was a Sabretooth, the Yellow Ranger. And, it was really strange. It's not a very conscious thing. To be quite honest,
it's not a conscious thing for you. I mean, personally, or I think it's very, very conscious thing for a lot of people. But
yeah, I think it's more of just kind of a thing that I do day to day, and I just think of words that I think sound fun together. So I do that, and then sometimes I'll get bummed out and write about girls and shit. And then other times it's just, I'm just really high. Like, I don't know.
We would never have guessed that.
Yeah, there's no real
not in a million
either.
Years.
Well, you know, that's my job, so.
There's nothing wrong with that, my friend.
No, absolutely not. So
your title comes from the Power Rangers.
Yeah, Power Rangers and acid. I think that's the best way to put it. Yeah.
Sweet.
I'm going to have another book split with Dustin Holland coming out in like August or September, and that one's going to be called Converse Mastodon. So I don't know, we're just rolling with
Converse Mastodon. Wow.
Yeah.
Converse Mastodon.
Yeah, Converse Mastodon. I don't just rolling with ancient stuff, prehistoric things, keeping it real. But yeah, the cover is actually done by my very good friend Joshua, his girlfriend Chelsea Petosa, who is she's like probably like a semester away from graduating at Rocky Mountain College of Art and Design.
Uh-huh.
She is phenomenal. She's done a couple of my show posters, and then this book cover. I just went over there one night, and Josh and I both work at the dispensary together, so anytime that we get together, we're trying out like new products. So we're just getting really ripped. And Chelsea was like, hey, I want to make your cover for your book, because I was talking to Josh about it. And I was like, yeah, for sure. She's like, what would you want? And I was like, all right, I want Sabretooth shooting rainbow lightning laser beams out of his eyes in the galaxy into like a diamond that's reflecting shit everywhere. And she was like super into it. So she's like, all right. And then, I don't know. This whole thing has just been a wild roller coaster.
So this current book you have out now from Clefjaw Press, there was no particular like influence for anything. I mean, what's the process like for you, Mr. WSB? I'm going to call you WSB, okay? Just keep it short and succinct and all that good, you know, fancy jargon. What's the writing process like for you? I mean, when you put together like a collection of poetry or whatnot, you know, what do you have anything in mind, or is it just that stream of consciousness like you were talking about that, you know, you just put together?
Yeah, no, actually, whenever I met, the first time I met you, you were at Brian, you were actually the first person I ever met in the scene, so shout out to you for that. But whenever I met I met everybody in Albuquerque, Frankie and I kind of
a lot.
Yeah, right. Frankie and I kind of discussed this for a second, and he was like, "Yeah, just send me like 100 poems." And the only way I've ever written, because I didn't have a computer for years, and I traveled the country, following bands around and eating acid and sleeping on couches and, you know, just at random colleges and random places, just doing shit. So all my poetry was just on a blog, which is the Cheeseburger Nebula. And I just pop on there whenever I got a chance. So, like, some of them are written from, like, some of the poems in the book. You know, I just sent 100 poems to Frankie and Dustin, and they chose the ones that they liked. And they were really more so like
there's nothing wrong with that. I mean, so then the editors of the actual book had a pretty significant influence on the final product there, assembling, I guess, a group of poems or whatnot they thought were kind of cohesive and you know, made a good fit?
Exactly. Like, I don't know. I really trust Frankie a lot. I just really connect with him on a lot of different levels. So I just kind of gave him my shit and was like, because, I mean, I've never been to college. I didn't really pay attention in high school. I have absolutely no basis in grammar or spelling, so that's all atrocious generally. So I don't know. I really need a good editing team like the Wonder Kid, Dustin Holland, and Frankie. Like they really help me out a lot more, like, than anything. Because, I mean, I really honestly, like, I didn't ever plan on writing or anything, and then this has just all kind of happened. So
well, how did it happen, or why? Better yet, why did it happen for you? Is it an outlet for you? Do you find it?
Yeah, whenever I was young, both my parents are ministers, so I moved, like, every, like, 3 or 4 years. Like, being a minister is, like, pretty much being in God's army and just moving around, like, small parts of cities, I guess. So I moved around the Texas Metroplex, you know. So, I mean, whenever you're, I don't know, that's just nuts. So I just drew all the time and wrote, like, crazy stories. And then, like, I wanted to make comic books for a long time, but then I found weed and my life took a different direction. And it's just then a couple of years ago, I was living in Austin and I just had like an art explosion. Started designing t-shirts, which I still currently do, and that was really my main passion. So writing was just kind of...
Tell me more about the t-shirts and your art design and all that, because I'm familiar with it. What's it called? EERLD apparel? How do you pronounce that?
Earled.
Earled
apparel.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, Earled is a slang term for hash oil.
really, I didn't know that. I'm not that embedded in the drug culture, but good to know.
most people aren't generally. I was living on a kid's couch, and my neighbor that I bought weed from ended up... ended up being this really awesome dude who was starting a t-shirt company. And he has, like, he's done all the designs and stuff. I've only done, like, packaging, a lot of networking, and then, like, you know, doing a lot of the grunt work, as it were. But we're about to, like, start introducing different artists, as, like, myself and then his girlfriend and then, like, different people that we know. It's just all really about, because the stoner culture is just generally not taken very seriously, and that You know, that kind of makes sense because it's represented kind of ridiculously generally with like Rastaman, and you know, it's a lot deeper than that, especially working in the industry out here. Like, a lot of people I deal with aren't people trying to get high. It's a lot of people who are trying to not eat pills for the rest of their life or not, you know, do something like that for the rest of their life. So it's, I don't know. It's a fun process, especially being in kind of a, especially in a downturn in the economy, being in something that's so, like, up and coming and profitable and recession-proof. Just, I don't know, it's everything that my grandparents and my parents tried to yell at me for, and then I get yelled at for it whenever I, you know, finally get into it, so. So, yeah, it's a good time.
Is there any particular piece from your current book, Galaxy vs. Sabretooth, that you would like to share or read with us?
Yeah, sure. I think a real good way to kind of explain, like, how I write is just, like, all right. This poem is called Our Swing Set is a Spaceship.
Uh-huh.
And I was living in Pittsburgh in this basement, just smoking weed and, you know, playing video games all day. And
yeah.
Living with this family, and I was really feeling down about life just because it was just really random that I had ended up there, you know, just one of those things. So this was just, in a dreary, written on a dreary Pittsburgh day. I never thought it would be in a book or, you know, or anything. I don't know. So. Writer, lacking words, or young adults who know how to bend time and space for primitive brain self-exploitation. A collected unconscious effort, sabotaging Jurassic heart support chalices. I've been frozen in thine eyesight ever since, my Juliet, Harlequin. Star-crossed lover has no trouble about falling into it. Minutes. It's not often you look your lover over centuries in the iris. I've seen this. At one time, we were both cats underneath a blanket of stars. Now we telepathically lay out landmines to blow apart each other's wants. Though, like a double helix, we twist passionately until we find we're at a zenith of needs for the heart. And if this love is so consequential, then let the world stop. I've never understood God until she and I laugh for hours about nothing. Something was so far from a mind it found oblivion in our courage. I woke up drenched in her jacket like it was Christmas morning. She skipped her classes for coffee. I skipped with her for hot chocolate. We shared chairs and told each other what disgusted us. It wasn't much, but my vices that kept me relatively sane and sober, even after Dark Star tour was over. Closure is something I've always been a fool over. I've never mustered up courage to say goodbye to her. Even now my eyes well up when I think about the world, how disgustingly large it can seem. But in comparison, there's nothing that can make me feel more lighthearted than a note on a computer screen that simply read anything.
In fucking poem?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. That's a standard here on our show. You have to say in fucking poem. Very cool, man. So that poem was, you know, pretty significant to you from that collection, or, I mean?
Yeah, well, a lot of them are about, like, a particular lady friend.
Uh-huh.
So, and whenever I was out in that part of the world, that was just, I don't know, really messed with my head at that time, so it was a lot of where my writing stemmed, and for whatever reason, Dustin and Frankie picked up onto that and picked a bunch of those poems. So it really speaks to me from a certain standpoint, which is a couple years ago, which is funny because I'm like writing a novel about like whenever I was traveling around and like sleeping on couches and shit.
Mm-hmm. Oh, working on a novel. See, that, poetry and novel writing, I mean, that's two different monsters,
yeah.
I think. It takes a lot more commitment and whatnot to work on a novel than it does a collection of poetry. Wow, yeah. So what's going on with this novel? Well, how far along are you?
A good portion of it was journaled at the time, so I have a lot of, like, this whole, like, notebook about, like, being in the midst of it, but a lot of it's kind of jargon, so I have to retool it because I was just on, like, you know, drugs and shit. So it's just, like, some shit is, like, unreadable, and most of it's written in a car, and, you know, it's, like, really angry a lot of the time, so it's, there's not a lot of hindsight into it, so I have to, like, kind of, like, I don't know, it's, like getting, like, a really shitty house and then completely redoing it, like, you know, like, it's something that at that point I thought was, like, great, but, you know, after, like, reexamining it, like, putting it down for a little while and letting it, like, simmer in my brain, because, like, after talking to a bunch of writers, especially Bud Smith, who also helped with Galaxy vs. Sabretooth, talking to him, I mean, because I've just been freaking out. I sent a little raw portion of the first chapter to him a few months ago, and, I mean, the input that I got from him has helped me so much be able to, like, one, differentiate poetry and novel writing, because that is two separate worlds completely.
Yeah,
and
I agree, yeah.
I get mixed up a lot of the time, like, I'll be writing and all of a sudden everything's rhyming, so it just sounds, like, really fucking strange, and then I'm, like, you know, trying to differentiate between those two, but, yeah, I don't know, so a lot of the poems are about that time period, too, so I don't know, it's all kind of aligning in my mind, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't really make sense yet, but it's cool, I don't know.
Well, yeah, amen, brother, that's the way it is for, I think, many artists and writers and whatever, you know, medium you're into, it doesn't make sense until after the fact. Like, it's all done. It's like you look at it and you reflect on what you've done or what you've been working on. It's like, holy shit, I actually had something significant to say there in that story or that poem or that painting or that comic strip or whatnot, you know. I think that's the way it is for a lot of artists and all that. Wow, yeah, well, that's really cool, man. So anything else? What should we expect coming up next for Mr. William Seward Bonney? Anything new coming up or any new projects that we should all know about?
Yeah, I'm going to be doing a self-published book that I want to do. It's called Studies. It's just a bunch of, like, numbered poems, 1 through 100, about just, like, relationships. And that's just going to be all, like, hand-done. Which is, like, nice paper and stuff. I don't know. I just, like, kind of want to have some crafts, like, arts and crafts fun.
Uh-huh.
I'm getting a, like website set up because I hand draw on T-shirts with Sharpies and I hand screen print. And I don't know. I'm going to be doing package giveaways with my book and, like, Earl T-shirts and stickers and then hand screen printed T-shirts and then, my roommate Madeline runs a record label called Tiny Amp, so we're going to be giving away a couple of her CDs. And she's actually on tour. I think she's going to be in Illinois the next, like, day or two. I don't remember exactly right off the top of my head, but
wow.
Tiny
Amp. Yeah. Tell us a little more about Tiny Amp. I mean, that's very intriguing and all that. And you got that Sunday night show on the Literary Underground Network. Called Tiny Amps.
Tiny Amps versus Literary Underground. Yeah, it's a shit show, to be completely honest with you. But Tiny Amp is just a cassette tape label that's local here in Denver. It's got about five bands on it right now, and we're really close knit, tight little family. I'm on the record label, but I don't make music, like the guy who, you know, is like the roadie and the
you're a roadie
guy. Yeah, like help set up, break down, you know, all that cool shit. Get drunk with the bands, you know.
Right, all right. Well, yeah. So what, yeah. Do you have any like really cool like roadie stories you could share with us?
I mean, I do have some, not whenever I was working. I did do roadie whenever I lived in Texas, too, for my friend's metal band. And one time we worked at this metal festival down outside of Austin. And the promoter ran out on us. So it was like one of those things where everybody woke up the next morning. There's like 100 bands there and no real electricity. You can't do anything. Everybody just kind of had to leave. So me and the drummer, who is a good friend of mine, and we actually threw Earl to sell the bongs and stuff that he blows. He's a glass blower. We're wandering around, and we run into this guy named he's called like the Plant Man or something crazy.
Plant Man.
And he's like, you guys come with me. And we're both like 18, so we're like, fuck yeah, we'll go with you. We end up at this tent, and we all sit down Indian style with a bunch of these other like greasy metal dudes, and then some like really strange like Austin hippie people. If anybody's ever been to Texas, you'll understand Austin hippie people. They're not necessarily hippies, but yeah. And the guy loads this giant hookah. I mean, this is like a 4 or 5 foot hookah. Like, I don't know. He's
really?
Like passing around the hose, yeah, and we're all taking tokes off of it. And then everybody, you know, we're like 10 minutes into this, and everybody starts to feel a little, you know, high, and somebody's like, yo, dude, what are we smoking? Because no one has the common decency to ask what we were smoking. He's like,
right.
He's like, dude, I'm glad you asked. So he, like, stands up. He goes, all right. So he pulls out this one kind of weed. He's like, yo, so this kind of weed, this kind of, like, shitty, like, you know, Mexican brick flag that you'd find in southern Texas, and then some shisha, you know, normal stuff that you would smoke in a hookah, then, like, some flavored tobacco that he had grown himself. Then, here's the kicker, ayahuasca, which is a hallucinogen, also and then some really nice weed on top of that, a little bit of hash, and then, and then there was some other kind of hallucinogen on top of all that, like a low grade of salvia or some kind of, like, yeah, anyway, and then there was some opium in there, too. So we're just fucking, like, laid out all of a sudden just at, 8:30 in the morning. And the guy, like, we finished smoking this bowl between the seven of us or whatever. Me and, like, three other people are just sitting around. Me and, like, my friend and then, like, a couple other people are just sitting around just like, oh, what the hell? And he's kind of giving it the plant man's like, hey, guys, you got to go. You know, like, hey, you know, like. And we're like, oh, okay. And, you know, the whole night before, we've been drinking whiskey and, you know, smoking weed and different shit like that. So I just on a different level, honestly. I emerged from this tent, and, like, the whole world is swaying back and forth. And, like, all the I look to my friend. He's, like, slow motion, like, shaking his head, like, I don't know. And then we just kind of, like, make it back to camp, and everybody at camp's like, hey, Rhody, you got to break down everything. So all of a sudden, I'm high, like, tripping balls, like, I can barely feel my face, just, like, picking stuff up, just, like, tearing down a pin, like, just looking around, just at this aftermath of this, like, metal festival. So there's all these, like, really unattractive, like, bald, you know, like, sweaty, oh, God, it was just,
wow.
I got a couple of just, yeah, really intense just moments like that, just on a copious amount of drugs, just like realizing the situation was not what I wanted it to be.
That's a great story, man. I mean, Jesus Christ, trying to break shit down and clean shit up after, you know, tripping like that. Wow.
Yeah, all at 8 in the morning, like 8, 9 o'clock in the morning, too.
Oh, Jesus Christ, yeah. Sounds like me trying to get my kids ready for school in the morning. But anyhow, wow, holy crap, man. That's fucking wild. All right, Mr. WSB. Going to have to give you the standard interview within the interview questions here that we give everybody that we have on here. I'm sure you've heard them before. If not, brace yourself, all right? Are you ready, Mr. WSB?
Born ready.
You're born ready? For some reason, I think you were. I really, truly think you were. All right, question number one. Do you make eye contact when you make love?
Hell yes.
Can you elaborate on that?
If you're not making eye contact, that's just creepy, in my opinion. Or you're really drunk. One of those two. There have been a couple times where I was really drunk and didn't make eye contact. But other than that, no, yeah, I generally, because I'm one of those guys, like, I save it generally for the special ladies. I don't, I'm not bagging random broads. I got caught when I was younger with a little case of the clap for like a week. And it was the worst experience I've ever had. So, and I had the hottest nurse ever.
Oh, hot nurses, yeah.
Uh-huh. Yeah, no, and she comes in and she's like, so what's going on? And I'm just, God, it was like, it just broke my heart to be like, well, I met this girl named Flower, and well, yeah. Don't, if there's any children listening as a PSA, if a woman tells you her name is Flower or any other kind of plant or inanimate object, don't
forget it. Oh, my gosh, you mentioned inanimate objects right there. Have you ever made love to, you know, this is like not the normal question, but have you ever made love to an inanimate object? Or use it as some sort of like, you know, device to enhance, like masturbatory, whatever.
I've never made love to an inanimate object.
Right.
One time I was really drunk and I finally convinced my girlfriend at the time to do anal, but we didn't have any lube. But I did have a jar of grape jelly, and I just I plopped it in there, and then I plopped it in there, and she was not. It was not a good scene. It was God. It was bad.
Oh Lord.
Great.
At least it smelled good, right?
It smelled great.
Smelled like a peanut butter and jelly sandwich. Jesus Christ.
Oh my God.
All right. And here's question number two, that we always interview within the interview that we give every guest we have on. And you know, I guess it doesn't really pertain to you, but since you already have a middle initial, but do you think it's ethical to, wait, I'm sorry. Would you ever consider activating a middle initial to enhance your poetry career? And obviously you have. I mean, you're W.S. Bonnie. I mean, you're William Seward. I mean, you've got the, yeah. Do you think there's some sort of like, I don't know, some significance to poets and writers having like a middle initial?
You know, I mean, it's significant for me, and I generally don't try to do the S dot because I think that is pretentious. I also think writing biographies are pretentious, so I think I'm a little out of the. I think I might be a little out of the loop, but it's. I don't know. It's my power number is 3. I generally try to do things in 3s, so I don't know.
Power number, huh? Days. Oh my gosh, you're into numerology?
Dude, I'm so. You're just out there.
You're into numerology and tarot cards?
I'm not into labeled things.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Uh-huh.
But I recognize like patterns in my own personal life and like numbers that stand out to me. So it's not anything that I've ever like dove into and like discussed with like someone, but yeah, no, I generally try to go to pump 3.
Pump 3, huh?
Yeah, no, you know.
Why exactly do you go to pump 3?
I don't know. The universe calls me to it, so I go for it.
I bet it does. Good Lord.
I have a weird thing. No, I'll go to pump 3, pump 6, or no, pump 3, pump 7, pump 9. Like, I'll go into the odd numbers. I'll do things by odd numbers, but even numbers really fucking get to me. And I don't understand why, but.
That's great. My next question is, do you think it's ethical to like your own posts on Facebook? And do you do it? And if you don't do it, do you know somebody who does like their own posts all the time on Facebook? You know, push the little like, the little big thumb thing?
Yeah, I think that's a pretty fucking asshole move to do. To be honest with you. Things like that.
An asshole move, huh?
That's like, you know, when you're at your friend's house and you're like, oh, I got a really nice dog, and the dog's like, sits down and then just starts licking its own balls. That's pretty much
yeah.
That's pretty much the equivalent to that, in my opinion.
Wow, I think that's probably the best answer I've ever heard regarding the whole like your own posts on Facebook. Wow,
like licking your own balls.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Lick your own balls, and you know, does it have to be like a cat thing, or I mean, a dog thing, or could it be a cat thing? I see my cat licking its own like penis all the time.
Yeah, no, definitely. It could be any kind of domesticated animal. Because, I mean, domesticated animals are already something that, like, 99% of humans are just like, fuck, man, I wish I could be a domesticated animal. Like, who doesn't wake up in the morning and is like, you know, it'd be awesome if I could just shit on the carpet right now and then just have somebody clean it up and then feed me, like, after that. Like, you know, that's the American dream summed up in a sentence.
Yeah, shitting on your own carpet. Hell yeah. I mean, my cats do it. They shit and they puke on my carpet,
like,
all the time. I mean, it's like, yeah, it's almost unbearable. So, my last and final question for the interview within the interview, Mr. WSB, is here's my opinion. I think threesomes, you know, as far as, like, you know, sexual encounters, threesomes reveal a lot about us. If you were ever in a threesome, you know, what would you think? I mean, would you consider yourself, like, to be, you know, the queen bee or a worker bee if you were involved in a threesome?
Well, I think, as any good lover knows, they should at any one time be the king, queen, or worker bee.
Uh-huh.
Depending on the mood and depending on what's going on at the time.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know. As long as it's just two chicks and me, I don't give a shit.
Okay. Wow. Okay, you don't give a shit. Well, here, even better. Have you ever been involved in a threesome?
You know, that is still on the bucket list. I have not.
Bucket list. There you go.
Oh, yeah.
That's a whole different show. That's a whole different show. We've had shows talking about, swinging
I had a real big change of heart a couple of years ago, a real
uh-huh.
come to Jesus moment on acid, and it was like one of those where I was trying to, I strive to be a really good person, but through all that meditation I've learned, I don't know if there's really any possible way to be a good person, so sometimes you just got to do what your heart calls you, so, you know.
Well, exactly. Being a good person, it's very subjective. It doesn't mean,
it is,
you know,
very subjective.
It is.
It doesn't
it
mean
is.
You
very
can't have
subjective.
Threesomes.
Right.
I think that's something
sexual,
that I...
Yeah. Sexual,
yeah. I think, I've kind of made the... I don't know. I'm high.
Well, that's okay. No, we're all high and drunk here tonight. And, you know, that's
poetry
no big deal.
Grenades.
Yeah,
shout
poetry
grenades.
Poetry
grenades. By the way,
I've had at least 20 of them today. Believe me, I'm here at home alone. I've already waxed my carrot at least 3 times since I'm home alone here. No wife, no kids. Believe me, you know. But anyhow, you know, no, seriously, it is very subjective. And you know, Jesus Christ. All right, you know what? Thank you so much, man. Thank you so much for coming on and sharing everything. Is there anything, any last thing you would like to talk about or share regarding your book, Galaxy versus Sabretooth, or anything else?
I think the best part about it is it's $2 on Kindle. So if you're out of that technology,
okay. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, like, it's very cheap. You know, $13.50 is just a book. And,
right.
And, you know, we put a lot of thought and heart into this and a lot of fun. It was a lot of fun more so than anything to just
uh-huh.
learn how to make a book.
So, nothing easy about it.
Yeah, even if you don't want to purchase a book, as long as you just go check out Cheeseburger Nebula
mm-hmm.
at Tumblr, you know, I'm not one on monetary gains or monetary goals.
Right.
So my motto is fuck money, get stitches. So let's, you know, just... You want to read some poetry, you know?
Right.
If you don't, I love you just the same.
Right. Well, one last question. You brought up Kindle, $2, you know, for a Kindle book. Do you have, I mean, is that something you're into, like reading books on Kindle, you know, e-books, or do you, what's your opinion on the whole e-book versus, like, you know, actual print book?
Just hey, man, my whole opinion on all that is, you know, you gotta change with the times, adapt or die.
Uh-huh.
I personally am a diehard. My dad has like 5,000 books in our house back
home. Wow.
Crazy hoarder of knowledge and words.
Mm-hmm.
It's one of those things where I grew up just reading books, and
mm-hmm.
I mean that's how I envision books. I don't envision books staring at a screen.
Right.
I like writing on a computer, but man, uh-huh. reading off a computer really just pisses me off. So
yeah.
I don't know. But anyway,
I concur.
There's a good portion of people out there who are really into that. So, you know, I just got a computer like 2 months ago. So
yeah,
that's my feelings on things.
Well, yeah, that's definitely the future things. Hey, man, we're gonna take a quick break here. Are you okay to stay on here a little bit longer? And are you willing to talk about? Talk with us. We're just going to freestyle it after this. We're going to have another music break here so I can go pee and everyone else, you know, here on here can go pee. And are you willing to stay on here and just shoot the shit with us about, I don't know, internet dating and stuff? Because that's something, that's a subject we are really, like, intent on, about internet dating and stuff like that and creating profiles and you know, is pros and cons. Would you be willing to stay on here and just
Shoot, definitely.
A few more. We've got about, you know, like 18 more minutes left here with the show, and we're gonna take a quick pee break here. You can go pee, smoke, or do what you got to do, and we'll be right back.
Oh yeah.
You willing to? I think.
Fuck
you.
Yeah.
All right, excellent. All right, so we're gonna take a quick break here, and we'll be right back. We'll start talking about some internet dating and, you know, websites and good stuff like that, and talk about upcoming shows. All right.
My name is Jorge Regula.
My name is Jorge Regula.
I'm walking down the street.
I'm walking down the street.
I love you.
I love you. Let's go
to the beach. Let's go sailing.
Let's go sailing.
Let's get a bite to eat.
Let's get a bite to eat.
Talk about movies.
Let's talk about movies.
Let's go to sleep. I wake up in the morning.
I wake up in the morning.
Put on my yellow shirt.
Put on my yellow shirt.
I get a bite to eat.
I get a bite to eat.
I go to work. I'm the AV guy.
I'm the AV guy.
I'm the AFNY guy.
I'm the AFNY guy.
I'm the piano guy.
I'm the piano guy.
Let's go to sleep. I wrote a new song.
I wrote a new song.
It has a good beat.
It has a good beat.
Let's talk about movies.
Let's talk about movies.
Let's get a bite to eat.
Da 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 da
All right. Here, we're back. We're back. We're with the final installment of Nothing to Lose on a Friday night here. Friday night in May. It's rainy and stormy here in Dayton, Ohio. And so, yeah. So, our last subject for the night, we're going to talk about dating and, you know, internet websites, you know, dating sites, pros and cons, and and where do we go from there? I mean, is this the new bar scene now, you know, with, you know, as far as dating goes and hooking up with people? I mean, what do you guys think there? What do you think, Mr. Gosinski and Dr. Quinn?
I know that. I feel like I'm such a man whore every time I go on daddyhunts.com. Check my messages.
Which one?
Daddy Hunts.
You added
Daddy
a new
Hunts.
One?
Dot
Wait,
com.
We had Mullet. Say that. I'm sorry. Say that again.
It's daddyhunts.com. Every time I go on there and check my messages, I feel like a man whore. They're just so bad. They want to plow me in every orifice you can think of. I don't know that it's more of a really a dating thing. They don't want to date. But I don't see them wanting to take me to dinner first. I think they just want to...
they just want to
plow your orifice.
Yes, it's rough.
Strap you to the table and, yeah.
Yeah, so... Maybe next time, I think I'll try a straight website like Brian said, like Cougar Hunter, whatever you
yeah,
call it.
Yeah, I did the whole CougarLife.com bullshit. Yeah.
I did.
the funny thing is I used my actual picture, a picture of me when I was 32, about a decade ago. And you know, I looked young. I mean, I looked younger than I actually was at the time. And, yeah, I used that picture and said I was 23. And I swear to God, within frickin' like 5 minutes, I had women from, like, Canada, like a 57-year-old woman from Canada and some, like, 41-year-old woman from Detroit and shit and... And here's the weird thing, like 23-year-old woman from Texas, you know, trying to like contact me and shit. you know, 23-year-old, you know, contacting a 23-year-old, there's nothing cougar about that. That's just wrong. but yeah, I'm really Mr. Gosinski. I'm really intrigued by the number of hits and stuff you have received for your. What's it?
Oh, man.
Daddy Hunt?
Yes, Daddy Hunt. It's over 1,000 now. It's ridiculous. The messages are duplicate messages, you see? Because what happens is I don't check it like daily, so sometimes these dudes will send me a message, and then 4 hours later they start to panic because I haven't responded.
Uh-huh.
So they'll come back with, hey, man, I hope I didn't come across as too aggressive. You know, I can be a tame bottom, too. And I'm like, oh,
are you serious? A tame
I
bottom,
swear,
huh?
Dude, man, the shit they sent me. Jesus.
That's beautiful. You know, the
okay.
Funny thing is... What? Go ahead.
Have you been... I was going to ask, have you been goatseed yet?
Have I been what?
Have you been goatseed yet?
Goatseed?
Wow, okay.
So, you don't know...
No,
I'll send it to you.
No, you need to, you know, no. Dr. Quinn, you cannot get on the show, talk about goat seeds, and just say, I'm going to send you a private. No,
goats?
No. Please
guys,
elaborate
guys,
and
guys,
tell us what the fuck
see,
a goat seed
hey,
is.
Hey, 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 hey. You seriously don't know what goat seed is.
Goat seed or goat seed? I don't understand what you're saying.
Goat seed. G-O-A-T-S-E.
No, is it a, is it like a California roll or something? Can I eat it? What is it?
I have to show you. I can't describe it. You have to see it. I will send it to you, and then you will express your horror, and you
okay,
will know what
okay.
I am talking about.
All right, I await the sending, I guess.
Okay.
Hold on here. Hold, please.
Killer bee style.
We don't have time to hold here, goddammit. What are you thinking? We
would
got some serious shit here.
I thought I was pre-approved. What do you mean, hold?
Continue the conversation. I'm pulling up Ghosty for you.
We should all do one together, Brian. We need to find one and do it together.
Yeah, absolutely. Do it together. Yeah, I think all three of us, you, me, and Dr. Quinn, need to make some fun profiles on the exact same website. That would be excellent. That would be really funny and...
each other or what?
Well, we'll try to avoid each other, but, you know, it'll be hard not to flirt, right? But... But seriously, that would make it even more intriguing. I'll let and we could continue with this whole internet dating saga.
I'm still waiting to see what a goatsy is. I'm still waiting for the
image. Yeah, I'm waiting too.
Image.
Hold on.
And Mr. WSB.
Yes, sir.
Do you have any experience regarding? I'm sorry. Dr. Quinn, you need to, until you can, like, talk to us about goat seeds or whatever the hell you're talking about, you need
to
shut the fuck up.
you did not.
I'm just teasing. Do you have some goat seeds?
Okay, I sent you your goat seed.
No, talk to us about it. No, don't send it to us. Talk to us right now about it.
Okay, yeah. I'm looking at a dude spreading open his asshole. And somehow he's able to maintain a hole.
Oh, my God, that's disgusting. I just saw it, too.
While he's spreading open his asshole and bent over.
What the fuck is this? Oh, my God, I have to flick it off. That's disgusting. I'm about to... God, I've been drinking far too much today to see something like that.
Shame
on you.
This isn't fair because Mr. WSB cannot see the link.
This is why I don't have internet in my house.
Yeah, you don't want to see it, Mr. WSB. Good Lord.
Yeah, no.
Right. So I can put on your Facebook page for you if you need it.
All right, no,
yeah,
do not.
Yeah.
No, it's disgusting.
On my wall.
So fucking disgusting. All right. So, anyhow.
I didn't know about that.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. You Google that stuff all the time, huh, Dr. Quinn?
Yeah, I didn't know about that.
No, it's one of the oldest memes there is. I can't believe you guys didn't know about that.
I try not to associate with people who would show me the insides of their butthole.
That's beyond the inside of the buttocks. I mean, that's beyond the sphincter.
How
was
able to maintain a hard-on during that whole...
That's probably what got him off, honestly.
What I was wanting to ask Mr. WSB is... Mr. William Seward Bonney, have you ever had any experience or any, you know, interaction with, you know, online dating or anything like that at all?
No.
I mean, no?
No.
No?
No.
Does that even intrigue you or what?
It kind of freaks me out, honestly.
It freaks you out? How so?
Yeah. Just the anonymous, I don't know, you just don't actually know who the other person. I would much rather meet people in real life than talk to people on the phone. I don't know, call me old-fashioned.
No, nothing old-fashioned about it. No, I agree. I'm just, I'm curious. You know, to me, I find it very intriguing, you know, people's
dating
rituals and whatnot.
Whenever I meet someone that I end up dating for a long time, it's generally, like, a really, like, awesome, like, instant attraction or something, you know what I mean?
Right.
Instead of scrolling through endless pages of pictures and being like letting my narcissism choose, you know what I mean? I'd much rather let the universe choose and just be, I don't know. That's just kind of my theory on it. It's just kind of forced, I guess.
Oh, so you find internet websites like that, dating websites, forced?
Yeah, I mean, I guess to a certain point, you know, mm-hmm. like, I know it can be hard to meet people, but it's much better to, like, wait a few months and meet someone that's actually worthwhile in person,
mm-hmm.
you know, than, like, go meet up with, like, a stranger just because of a few, like, internet conversations.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
No, it makes sense. I get it. Totally, I get it. I just, my thing is, I just know that you're not part of the majority, I don't think. That's more of a, I don't know, point of view that I could relate more to. But I think the majority, a lot of people, you know, it's tending to kind of curve towards the internet, you know, meeting people through IM conversations, whatnot, and, you know, internet dating sites or whatnot. You know, it's just kind of, it's bizarre and weird and kind of foreign to me, and that's why I find it intriguing to explore that aspect of our culture, because it is very much, I think, it has become a great part of our culture with the internet dating and all that. But, yeah, Mr. WSB, I agree with you. Yeah, I prefer the conventional, just meeting someone in person and getting to know them, you know, in real life, because, you know, people can fake and make generic profiles or whatnot on, you know, these internet dating sites, and that's kind of the point. It's kind of an ongoing thing we've been working with here on our show, is we've all created these funny, like, fake, you know, profiles on these dating sites, and we're going to keep doing that more so and more so, and just exploring it, because I find it, you know, very fascinating. All right,
yeah,
so, you know, we're almost done with the show. We're almost, wow, yeah, we got, like, 2 minutes left here, and this has been a lot of fun. It's been a great show once again. Wow. You know, I'd like to thank Mr. Luis Rivas and Mr. William Seward Bonney for joining us tonight and sharing all their creativity and greatness and, you know, promoting their books and, you know, just hanging with us and having fun. And, of course, my wonderful co-host, Mr. Michael DeGasinski. And, what's the other chick's name? What's her name? Oh, Michelle. Yeah.
Michelle Gochi Quinn. I'm going to have nightmares
now.
Oh,
Michelle. Michelle,
that's,
you know,
right.
We love you. You are wonderful. And we love you to death. And we cherish you being here on, you know, on the show with us. And I cherish the time I got to hang out with you in Cleveland and everything. Yes, all right. I just got the countdown from the Blog Talk Radio English chick. All right. I'd like to say goodnight to everybody. And, wow, another fun and great show, guys. And, oh, my gosh, what's on the menu for next week? Who is it?
Judy King, I think.
Oh, my gosh. The 17th, we got Judy Kang. She's a great musician. It's going to be an exciting show. We will be talking about Judy Kang, interviewing Judy Kang, and having all kinds of other fun, just wonderfulness. And thank you again to everybody. And we're going to, oh, God. Here we go. We're closing out. We're closing out with, just going to flush this right down the toilet like the rest of the shows. All right. Good night, everybody.
Bye, y'all.